passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your G1 Climax review. I am John Pollock, and joining me live and free tonight here on the Post YouTube channel is Karen Peterson to chat all about the G1 happenings from this weekend. Karen, how are you?
I'm a little tired, a little bit of G1 burnout, but I'm doing okay.
Yes, we were just discussing the amount of volume of professional wrestling that is out there, a heavy amount of it concentrated with New Japan. But I'm kind of curious, what among all of the tournaments that are going on right now, what are you somewhat keeping up to date with? Are you behind on Stardom, or is stuff just like falling by the wayside?
I'm behind on Stardom just because they have everything on tape delay. And after we recorded about 2 weekends ago, I realized that I hit a wall and I have massive burnout. So I'm just kind of like watching wrestling when I can, but not killing myself to watch all the things. And I have seen the results of the Tokyo Princess Cup, but I haven't watched the shows yet. That's on my docket for this coming week.
Well, there you have it. We sound like the performers right now that are just at the end of the G1 here, watching all of this stuff. But I wanted to try doing a free G1 show because coming up this week, we're going to be doing back-to-back-to-back G1 shows, Tuesday, goodness, Wednesday, Thursday. So those will be exclusive for Post Wrestling Cafe members. Tuesday, I'm going to be joined by Mike Murray, and then Wednesday and Thursday, Bruce Lord will be in the hot seat with me. And I haven't run this by Bruce yet, but Thursday, we are all... Bruce is hearing about this for the first time. We are going to do the end of tournament post wrestling G1 awards. Okay, so you'll want to tune into that on Thursday. We will go through best performer, best match. Maybe we'll also talk about worst performer and worst match, because we're going to balance things out as well. So lots of great stuff coming up this week. Also of note, Monday, I'm going to be dropping an interview at 11 a.m. here on the YouTube chat with Brian Gewirtz, the former head writer of WWE. He is going to be on with us. And then Monday night, the great Nate Milton joining me for Rewind to Raw. So it's going to be a very, very busy week, as is the usual here at Post Wrestling. The whole schedule will be up late tonight at postwrestling.com. But we have two nights to go through of the G1 from this past weekend. And this sets up the final round robin matches for Tuesday. And I think I've mapped out all of the different scenarios. So I will cross-reference them with Karen and make sure I didn't make any errors along the way, and Karen can keep me on the right path here of all of the, all of this math. The D block, folks, we will get into the D block. Okay, it's going to be a complicated one, but we go back to Saturday in Machida. Am I pronouncing that right? Machida.
Machida.
Machida. Okay. because Lyoto Machida really just throws me off when I see this particular spelling. But they had over 2,200 people at this show, 2,212. And this featured a rare three-man booth of Kevin Kelly, Chris Charlton, and David Finlay as well. And we will also talk about the contributions of one Jonah on Sunday's card on commentary. Maybe that's going to be an award. We will give best guest commentator at the end of this G1. Some interesting candidates there. But we're going to we'll start off here with the undercard matches that went down on Saturday. Juice Robinson, Bad Luck Fale, Chase Owens, and El Fantasmo beat Hiroshi Tanahashi, Tama Tonga, David Finlay, and Jado, with the C-trigger executed by Chase Owens on, you guessed it, Jado taking the fall. Jonah and Bad Dude Tito over Tom Lawler and Royce Isaacs. We'll be talking about Tom Lawler later. Tetsuya Naito, Sonata, and Bushi over Lance Archer, Zack Sabre Jr., and Taka Michinoku, and Kazuchika Okada, Hirooki Goto, and Tomohiro Ishii over Evil, Sho, and Dick Togo to whet everyone's appetite for the main course that was the five tournament matches. And you lucked in, Karen, because you got to do Sunday, which was a novel four tournament matches as we went to the earlier format. So always you know, nice when you can log into New Japan World and you realize, oh, it's a four match day instead of five.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll also throw it out that because we are doing live, if you have any super chats, just overall thoughts on the G1 matches that have really stood out to you in this tournament, whatever your feedback is for the G1. If there are super chats, you can send them in. I will be monitoring those. And if we have some time, we will get to those at the end of our reviews. But let's talk about the tournament matches from Saturday. Starting things off, Aaron Henare taking on Kenta, both coming in with 2 points, although Henare has a match in hand. So this would be the end of Hanare's tournament, and Kenta getting ready for his weekend of spoils, as he was going to be knocking off someone of prominence. And Chris Charlton noting that he has read Kenta's entire book already. And it seemed he gave, I would say, a good recommendation, but not one of the, not an overwhelming one. He said, it's good. It's good. I think I enjoyed it. So I don't know if that was Chris being polite or if it's really worth going out of your way to check out. I would think the Kenta story we talked about would be a very compelling one if he's open and honest.
I'm very salty that I have not been able to locate a copy of this book.
You are the gateway for us to figure out what is contained in this book.
Well, the thing is that that book highlights his whole 22-year career so far, from like being like a young, handsome wrestler to becoming like the charisma of Noah, him going to the United States for WWE, and then coming back afterwards. And I guess they underestimated how many people wanted to buy this book. So it went on sale like at the venues, sold out, went on sale at like Amazon and Rakuten and all like several other online vendors, sold out. So they're working on another printing, but it's like, I've wanted to order that book. And it's like, if I go to Amazon Japan, it's like, you can get this book in 2 to 17 weeks. 2 to 17 weeks, which is it?
That's a range. My goodness, 2 to 17 weeks.
So
that's
best-selling author on Amazon Japan, Kenta.
That's covering their bases for you. Well, the match here, Kenta is striving for a 500 record, so he's got some work to do. And the commentators are explaining that, you know, that's kind of Kenta's motivation, get to 500. He wants to be invited back. Henare, they think he's done enough. He's going to get invited back. And I'm looking at the records. I'm like, we're just strictly basing it on here. It's like, okay, the guy won a match and he's lost everything since. I mean, from a sports perspective here, I mean, would this guy be getting the guaranteed invite back? I mean, he's 1-4 here.
Well, I mean, if you're going to compare him to, say, your favorite in the tournament, Yujiro,
that guy's got a season's pass for life in the G1. I mean, Yujiro will outlive me in these G1s.
I think for a first G1, at least he got a win, because had he gone in as a young lion, he would have had the same problem that every young lion that's ever in a G1 is that you're there just to eat the pins for every single match. He waited 6 years to finally get here. I think they're putting a lot of energy and effort into pulling the trigger on United Empire and like building a lot of the people in that group strong. This year might be his first year, but I think he only has... I think he can't slip any further, but I definitely think he's on the climb.
Yeah. I mean, he did get a very prominent win at the beginning, and I'm sure that will be followed up on coming out of this. Like, it was – like, he was sort of like this entry level into the G1. He got his signature win, and that's his little prize coming out of the G1. But, yeah. I mean, it's a long-term story, I think, with Aaron Hanare down the road. So we got to see a lot of Hanare's kicks, which have been really a highlight throughout a lot of these matches, integrating his kickboxing background. Kent is using the hammer lock and rams Hanare's shoulder into the rail, and then he's working on the Achilles of Hanare, citing his past injury. And Hanare comes back, more kicks. He's on top of this. This man has his game plan ready, going after the Achilles. And Finley starts talking about his own shoulder and the injury he had several years ago that took him out for months, stating that he will never be 100%, at least his shoulder will not be, due to the loss of power and range of motion from this shoulder injury. So I thought this like added context as well from him explaining his own shoulder woes in this. Hanare loses Kenta on the berserker bomb, and Chris says he tried to sandbag him here. And Kenta stops Ultima grabbing the referee, and we get Kenta's just giant slaps, and a kick drops Kenta, more strikes, he stops the Streets of Rage, and then there's the game over to a triangle. Hanare power bombs his way out, and then the closing sequence sees Kenta stop Rampage, applying game over, and it was game over for Hanare, who taps out at 12 minutes and 36 seconds, finishing his tournament at 1-5.
Well, if I remember correctly, even when Kenta came into the G1 a couple of years ago, back in 2019, he didn't necessarily have a stellar G1 that first year either. And with all the new people that they brought in this year, it was one of those things where, on top of all the new people, they protected a lot of people that really didn't need protecting in this G1.
Yeah, that sometimes is my criticism of the G1. They try to do too much and protect everyone. And in that, I think a lot of them kind of get lost in the shuffle when everyone's being given something, or, you know, you don't have those like 3-4 standouts.
I was hoping it would, like, where Hanare is concerned, and I think some other people are concerned, I think, you know, Tom Lawler would be another example, is that I wish it was a little more balanced across the board, where everyone was fighting for, like, everyone's like 3-2 and 2-3. But there were people that were like racking up 5, and it's like, well, what are you going to do from here? So I'm just glad that Hanare finally got the chance to be in a G1, because he had been overlooked and overlooked and overlooked for multiple years. So I know it's not the ideal turnout or outcome for him, but at least he has the opportunity now.
Do you feel, as we look like down the road, do you feel this win over Tanahashi will be significant? Will this be like, will they get the value out of what a win over Tanahashi means in 2022?
If you think about the people who have pinned Tanahashi and had that elusive Tanahashi high profile win in the last couple of years, Ospreay's gotten it.
Yes.
And he got the push. I mean, Chase got it also, and the company
Chase, I would say, like, I would imagine that's an outcome. I don't know how many people remember from last year. I wouldn't say that was one that really you got that kind of significance out of.
But that's the thing, is that there are people that in previous years have gotten that elusive Tanahashi rub, especially as somebody who's like either a debutant in the G1 or typically someone who hovers near the lower half of the mid card.
Yeah.
So for Hanare, there are plenty of other great candidates in the C block for him to have pinned to get his one win. But I mean, Tanahashi would be the guy that if you were only going to walk out of this G1 with one win, why not like, the biggest name that's in the block?
Yes. So that concludes Hanare's tournament, and we'll talk about Kenta's last round robin match, that coming up on today's earlier show, where he headlined against Mr. Tanahashi. Tori Yano against Jeff Cobb. So Yano is finishing up his tournament with a record of 1-4. Cobb comes out. He's at 2-2 in the A block. And Chris notes it's opposite day, as Cobb is out with his Hawaiian shirt and deodorant. A bit of a callback there. And it's a delay for Yano's entrance, as Jeff Cobb is missing. It's Yano that's missing. And Yano comes out through the crowd and sneaks out from behind and does a roll up and then sprays disinfectant into Cobb's eyes for another 2. So this was going to be funny Jeff, as they announced here. Cobb's arms end up getting put into his singlet, and then he's wrapped up like the burrito in the ring skirt, and he's down on the ground. He has to hop his way up to the ring while his arms are trapped in the singlet, and does make his way back into the ring where he's got to fight back with his arms still trapped in the singlet, as they compared him to a dolphin here as he hit a drop kick without the use of his arms, which is an impressive feat for a man this size to get up off get a vertical like this without his arms free.
See, I go back to what Kevin Kelly said about Jeff Cobb earlier in the tournament, where he's like, it's not fair. It's not fair, the things that Jeff Cobb can do. And I know a lot of people are going to poo-poo on this match, and maybe it's the G1 burnout. But the fact that he leapt back into the ring with his arms in his singlet, and then he did an Orange Cassidy where he just wrestled the next, like, 3 minutes completely with his arms. Like, he committed to the gimmick, and I can't be mad at it because, you know, I trip over my own feet walking up the stairs, and this man's doing, like, jumping kicks and everything else, drop kicks with his arms just like, and yeah, he did look like a little dolphin. I was making sound effects as he was, like, just, like, springing everywhere.
This is the real subject matter of don't try this at home. It's like most kids at home, they're not Mick Foley-ing off their roof or something. But this is something they're bored at home. They might try, and they're going to separate their shoulder landing on the floor after trying this. So Yano is sent into the exposed buckle and takes his big overhead belly to belly. The arms are now free from Cobb, and he catches Yano's low blow and puts the shirt of Yano over top his head. And after eating a super kick, takes the tour of the islands and delivers it in 4 minutes and 38 seconds. And he goes up to Kevin Kelly, says he smells great, and we got to see Funny Jeff. So Funny Jeff moved to 3-2 and finishes with 6 points. And this actually was a match of importance because it was like the slimmest of margins, but he was technically alive in this block. So this was must win for him. And we will update that later. So we should actually go back because we missed our rating for the first match, and we can't go without a rating. So first, your rating for Hanare and Kenta, and then Yano and Cobb.
I think I'm at the point right now where I'm just like, again, I'm just glad I'm still watching the G1 because I'm just so tired. So I just gave it a large with one sugar just because I feel like they're doing their best with what they've been given. They know that they're not the ones that are going to be going to the semifinals or whatever, but they made it entertaining. And I'm still surprised at how much weight and bulk Hanari's put on in the last, like, 6 months, if not less than that.
Yeah, I went with a cool, I went with a medium milk sugar. Hold the sleeve that was my ranking for Kenta and Hanare. Yano and Cobb, I'm going with the Biebs brew up here in Canada.
What is a Biebs brew for
the
us?
The Biebs brew is a French vanilla cold brew that Tim Hortons is working alongside Justin Bieber with. Very popular up here. And I can say that through Braden Harrington, I have found myself getting into this the odd order. So it's something different. It's kind of it's a bit of a novelty, but it was all right.
What size are we ordering this evening, John? Oh,
this was a small. Let's not go crazy here. Okay. This was like, it was like a specialty drink, but not a great one. Timing wise, 4.5 minutes. I was happy with this. Yano, I am not a negative Yano person for those that have heard our G1s over the years. He hasn't like wowed me this G1. I think it's been difficult with like the crowd that cannot cheer a lot of the comedy spots. And I feel like he has kind of relied on the greatest hits. This one felt like a concerted effort to be a different type of match. And it seemed the audience enjoyed it seeing Cobb in this role. So it isn't going to be for everybody, but it was fun. And I mean, it was less than 5 minutes of your time. It's really hard to be too negative on it. So there we have it. And that's Yano's tournament. So he's done, and Cobb would have Tom Lawler that we'll talk about from today's show. So impressions of Jeff Cobb this year so far.
It's really hard to go back from last year where he was like 7-1 to this where he's, I knew as soon as they announced the blocks this year with having Ospreay and Jay back that the push that Jeff sustained while they were gone was now over, and it was very frustrating to watch. I mean, I'm again, like I said before, I'm just glad he's leaned into it. He's doing the best he can with what he has. But I gave them a medium with two sugars just because I'm sweet on Jeff and Yano. So
all right, two of like the cube sugars.
Yes.
Okay. Shingo Takagi against Yujiro Takahashi.
Your favorite.
Yujiro with 6 points dominating this D block against the 2-2 Takagi. And Yujiro uses a chair on the floor and then an inverted DDT. And Kelly notes that Yujiro wrestles at a very slow pace. Was that an adjustment for you, referring to David Finley? I loved like the subtle shade here from Kevin Kelly of the slower-paced Yujiro and how it's difficult for people to adapt to. And they brought up here that I don't know if this was legit, if this was kind of a storyline, but they stated that in Finley's first tournament match against Yujiro, he suffered a concussion and then just kept going in the tournament. So this would have been on July 20th. And yeah, he just alluded to Yujiro delivering, I think they mentioned like an inverted DDT, and it just rocked Finley because that was not brought up in his other matches, like a story. Yeah. So I read this as like this guy got a concussion, which is a bit concerning, but you know, went through and did have like some great performances afterwards. Hopefully he is better now. He should not be working with a concussion. Takagi is setting up for the end here when Sho gets involved with the wrench. And that's when we get the full Yujiro experience here. He grabs Takagi from the floor, and then Yujiro hits the intercollegiate slam, Miami Shine. Takagi kicks out, and then Sho hits him with a chair from the floor. That sets up Pimp Juice. Again, Takagi kicks out of that. Yujiro then responds by kicking out of Made in Japan, and we get a Fisherman Buster on the floor delivered to Takagi, and he stops Yujiro from getting in the ring. He hits his own DVD, and then Sho has to help Yujiro get in right at the count of 19. So we're getting down to the closing stretch of the match here. Takagi is shoved into the referee, and there's a chair to the back. Takagi punches the chair into Yujiro, and then nails Sho, Pumping Bomber, and Last of the Dragon, and Takagi prevails in 15 minutes and 25 seconds. And then it's Takagi holding his head as he gets checked on the floor on the way to the back. So hopefully he was not damaged here like David Finley. But everyone sit back, brace yourselves. I thought this was Yujiro's best match of the G1.
Oh wait. Are you feeling all right? Blink twice if you're okay.
Listen, this was the best you're going to get out of Yujiro. This might be on the weaker side of the Shingo matches, but this man was he was a one-man army here with Yujiro, but it was a more than passable match. And 15 minutes of Yujiro, it better be Shingo Takagi or Will Ospreay that's opposite him. But I thought they did enough here, and that was with all the House of Torture bullshit on top of it.
What I wouldn't give to be the one at ringside just staring at Sho and so he would stop doing what he's doing and know that he's better than this. I'm so exhausted watching Sho just fetter away all of his talent to be.
Maybe we'll do best lackey of the G1 on our awards, and maybe Sho could be a finalist for that.
Yeah,
that's his role. Best lackey.
I love him, but I don't like him very much right now. He's also up for best merch shill because he's always wearing Evil and Yujiro shirts, very much like how Ghetto wears all of Jay's stuff.
He's very unselfish.
Yeah, I don't think he had a choice, honestly. But I mean, I wish they could have shaved off about 5 minutes off of this match. It didn't need to be 15 minutes long.
Yeah, I can certainly see that with all the interference. I'm numb to it at this point. I'm just like, I know what's coming. I went large with a milk in this. I'm not going to go sugar and sleeve territory, but this was a very good match, I thought, overall. So you can't say I'm biased against Yujiro here. So
it was large, black, nothing in it. Like my heart right now. Empty.
Just empty. Does the job, but it's not a fun one.
No. So, on the burner a little too long.
So Takagi is obviously in a very important situation in the D block. We'll go over that later. He gets El Phantasmo on Tuesday, and folks, Yujiro's done for another year. Yoshihashi against Will Ospreay in the D block. Both have identical records of 2-2, and there's a big discussion at the beginning with Kevin Kelly, Chris Charlton, and David Finley about using tape for your injuries. And dude, Kevin Kelly was so probing here. He was like, do you get the final say about tape? Do the trainers insist on you using tape? David Finley was so just, this was complete improv because he's just trying to answer these. And I'm sure these questions are just coming out of nowhere for him. He's like, I've got the final say. And he notes like the danger, like you need it for your injury, but it's putting a target on yourself by putting the tape on, which is funny because it always used to be the trick, especially among fighters, is that if they had a bad knee, they put the brace on both knees, so yeah, to confuse people. But yeah, they had quite the discussion here. They plugged Ospreay's participation in the AEW Trios tournament, teaming with Aussie Open, and then Ospreay goes after the injured shoulder of Yoshihashi. So this kind of ties into the shoulder discussion earlier. Kelly brings up that Will Ospreay now has 20 five-star matches after his latest one with Shingo Takagi, with the Observer coming out this past week. All the offense centers around the shoulder of Yoshihashi. He drops him off the turnbuckle onto the shoulders, flying forearm to the shoulder. I mean, it was just total targeting of the shoulder. He blocks an os cutter, and Yoshihashi fights back with a dragon suplex. He's clutching the shoulder amongst this comeback, and then a head kick drops Yoshihashi, and Ospreay keeps his grip applied until Yoshihashi gets to his feet, and boom, he hits him with karma for a two count. And Kelly is just throwing in the towel here for Yoshihashi. He says, "I can't see this lasting another minute for Yoshihashi." He's holding on. Karma gets countered with the stun dog, and then this beautiful looking os cutter. I mean, Yoshihashi took this thing fantastic. It was like this guy had been shot and just fell to his doom. He ducks the hidden blade. There's another os cutter into a super kick in midair that Yoshihashi lands, and then Yoshihashi with the destroyer facebuster counter by Ospreay, and we get the Kumagoroshi for the two count before Will hits the Chelsea grin and hidden blade to win this one in 18 minutes and 46 seconds. I thought this was great.
This was my favorite match of the night.
I think, yeah, I think most would agree with you. It was outstanding. I went XL on this one. I had high hopes for this one. It was met. I mean, Ospreay, I don't think he has had anything in the realm of just an average match in this block. I mean, he has been, I think a lot of the attention has been spread elsewhere, but his consistency has been maybe unparalleled among the performers this year. Tremendous stuff. He holds up the U.S. belt for David Finlay there ringside, and Finlay says, "After the G1, and Will gets into his face, and David says he despises him and he will beat him once again because he does hold a win over Ospreay from earlier in the tournament. So Ospreay will take on Juice on Tuesday. Yoshihashi will take on David Finlay on the show that we're going to get to from today's card. But yeah, I went XL on this one. Where did you go?
XL with a shot of espresso.
Whoa, with the espresso.
Yes, largely because everyone underestimates Yoshihashi for most of the year until we get to the G1 and or some big never championship. We get big match Yoshihashi, and he brought it, and I was very proud of him. And I'm sure a lot of people picked Ospreay to win this match, but I didn't. I believed in Yoshihashi.
I want to give a shout out to all the people in the chat room, because sometimes, Karen, we're so popular now, we get spam in this.
I see.
Yeah. So I have just figured out how to block these people.
Well,
so,
done.
I dare you at me. I'm ready.
John.
I'm going to block you. Okay. 69mega.com. Come at me. I'm going to fire off. It's going to be a block party.
Emotion.
Who
get
does
out
this
of
stuff?
Here.
Main event we go to, the undefeated Jay White, who is back after missing two tag matches with Heatstroke, and he's taken on Taichi with a record of 2-2. So Taichi is technically still alive because he has two matches, and in theory, Jay White could lose two matches, but Jay's running the hot hand here with the undefeated streak in the B block. So Jay starts, and he wants to do a sumo standoff, but then drives Taichi into the corner and just starts stomping on him. Ghetto distracts, allowing White to choke with a Bullet Club towel, and when he's caught by Red Shoes, he just yells, "It's just a fucking towel," as if like Taichi should be able to withstand this choke. Taichi comes back with these brutal kicks to the chest, and then Taichi's momentum is stopped as Ghetto grabs Miho Abe by the hair on the floor, and Taichi just like gets this like non-emotional look on his face and just starts no-selling all of White's offense, the chops he's delivering, and calmly walks down Ghetto on the floor, who starts begging off. Yoshinobu Kanemaru then backs up Taichi by getting up from the commentary area, and Ghetto's in the ring. White tries to sleeper suplex, and it's stopped as Taichi takes both men down and hits a last ride powerbomb. White collapses, avoiding a buzzsaw kick, and eventually hits the sleeper suplex. Taichi just pops right back up to his feet and hits the dangerous suplex, and multiple times White's Blade Runner gets countered. Taichi gets a Ghetto clutch for a near fall, and then the Yokozuna elbow gets caught, but again he stops the Blade Runner, and Taichi hits numerous counters. White finally hits it off of the counter. Both men are down, and he goes for another Blade Runner, struggles to lift Taichi off the mat, and he needs help using the rope, takes Taichi over to the center, and he hits the match-ending Blade Runner to win this one in 23 minutes and 20 seconds, eliminating Taichi's hopes and continuing his undefeated streak as Jay improves to 5-0 in the block.
There are two people in the New Japan universe that you don't put your hands on. Abe Miho and Peter. You don't put your hands on them, especially if there's other members from that faction at ringside. So when as soon as Ghetto grabbed Miho's hair, I'm like, oh no. Oh no, who's coming for him this time? So yes, I was very happy to see Kanemaru he didn't even really put hands on me, he just walked over there and was like, you sure you want to do this? So
yes. It was a very stern warning from Yoshinobu Kanemaru and yes. And Taichi getting very serious here. I like the match.
It was fine.
Yeah, I'm not going to go like above and beyond that. Like it was a nice match. It wasn't the match of the show. I would say like for Taichi as well. Like I think, you know, for these big matches, he really does get up for them. I wouldn't say this was either guy's that best match of the tournament. No. I still went with a Milk and Sugar, but. Definitely below Ospreay and Yoshihashi, which I thought was the clear-cut match of the night here. But continues the undefeated streak for Jay White, and we will talk about how that plays into the final round-robin match that he has with Tama Tonga coming up later this week. But what I did think was incredible was the post-match here. So Kelly is explaining how the fans are leaving the building. They would rather walk out into a typhoon than hear Jay White gloat. And Jay White is demanding ice from the people at ringside, from the young boys. He says, don't you know I have heat stroke? But then tells the fans, you fools, I live in Florida. You think a little sun and heat was going to bother me? All of you were so gullible. I managed to get 2 days off from these meaningless tag matches in order to be rested up. And he makes fun of all the well wishes he received. He pretends to cry. The fans like clap here. And Kelly informs us, don't clap. He's not being genuine. It was like they were not understanding the sarcasm here from Jay White. Other than his clap post-match promo, this was his best message, this promo of the tournament. I thought he was just hilarious here.
It was one of those things where it's hard when they don't have a translator at ringside, so the fans are just happy that he won the match, and that, or you know, his Jay has a very loyal following in Japan, so he could be saying the most horrible things to them, but they're just like, yeah, you're wonderful, you're doing great. But yeah, with the typhoon is like, I mean, for us, it's like hurricane season here in Florida, so it only needs to get to a certain level before people really worry about it. It's just when they start threatening to shut the trains off that people have a problem with, because then they get stuck wherever they're at.
Right.
But I admittedly, as soon as he won, I turned it off. I like Jay's promos, but sometimes he talks a little too long, he screams a little too much, and I'm just like, no, it's 8:30 in the morning, no.
Jay White is not for everybody, as I've learned just from like wide varieties of whether he's like a heel that is like a little too sticky versus one that's like effective and gets the emotions out of you that you want to be getting. Like he's someone I enjoy quite a lot, but I also understand like it's grating for others as well. And he's in a very obviously prominent spot and has been all over this tournament as like the dominant force of it. So he, as we mentioned, has Tama Tonga on Tuesday, and Taichi, we'll be getting to his final match against the Great Okan. But this show, I would certainly recommend the Ospreay Yoshihashi match, where I don't know if I'd fully go on Shingo and Yujiro to recommendation territory, but you could check that one out. I do feel it was Yujiro's best match of the tournament, and that's kind of what I took from this particular day.
Yeah, I would agree.
In terms of the contest, you know what? I will do an update at the end of day 17, because we'll just do a full update on where everyone stands. But for Saturday's show, there were several who got perfect on the day, and that included actually quite a lot. It's literally 194 people in our contest got 5 for 5 on Saturday's card, which may be a record.
Well,
so tremendous job by our listeners who are very astute, picking this all before the tournament began. So they didn't have the luxury of seeing where everybody would be after 16 days. But 96% of people picked Ospreay over Yoshihashi. 90% picked Shingo over Yujiro, which I guess not a crazy stretch here going on. 89% picked White over Taichi. 86% picked Kento over Hanare. And 71% saw Jeff Cobb beating Toru Yano. So congratulations, all who got 5 out of 5, including Jordan Goodman, John Cena, Bruce Lord, Davey Portman, and W.H. Park, who just saw this coming from a mile away. You and I, Karen, both went 3 for 5 on Saturday's card.
It's fine. I as I said, I'm determined to be dead last in the E block now. I'm like,
well, you know what? There's somebody hot on your heels, and his name is John Pollock, because I don't even want to say slipping, because I've never had a good burst of momentum during this entire G1 tournament. I have been the Aaron Hanare in my first G1 contest, and I'll see if I have one little thing to hold my hat on at the end. I'm not getting a Tanahashi victory.
I'm turning into that, like, that Homer Simpson meme where he's like patting the seat next to him on the sofa being like, "Join us." Join me, John. Join me at the bottom.
One of us is ending up in the basement. That's going to be the drama of this this E-block as it wraps itself up.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So we go to today's show from Nagano. This is at the White Ring, which is, I believe, the first time they've done a G1 show proper at this venue. It was opened up in 98 when the Olympics came to Nagano. So 1,728 fans in attendance. And the undercard featured Evil, Yujiro, Sho, and Dick Togo over Goto, Yudo Nakashima, Ryohei Oiwa, and Kosei Fujita. Will Ospreay and Aaron Hanare beating Bad Dude Tito and Jonah, with Tito taking the fall. Juice Robinson, Bad Luck Fall, Chase Owens, and El Fantasmo over Shingo, Naito, Sonata, and Bushi, with Bushi being hit with the C trigger, and Okada, Ishii, and Toru Yano beating Lance Archer, Zack Sabre Jr., and Taka Michinoku, with Taka taking the fall off courtesy of Yano. So there you have it. Oh, and Tama Tonga and Jado beating Jay White and Ghetto. So we got to see Ghetto and Jado go at it on the undercard.
I'm still convinced that this G1 is still about the breakup of Ghetto and Jado and not actually all the Bullet Club Civil War stuff.
We've got three more nights at Budokan. plenty of time to shoot some big angle. So this one had Kevin Kelly and Jonah on commentary. I thought Jonah was great.
I've loved the variety of wrestlers that have joined Kevin at commentary whenever he's outside of town. It's refreshing because I always enjoy wrestlers talking wrestling. And it also, because a lot of them do it out of character, minus ELP wearing a Hawaiian shirt and eating pizza. I mean, like, it makes them more human and more accessible, and like endears them even further to people who may not necessarily follow New Japan Strong very closely.
Yeah. If you do go back, like, I thought just getting some of my thoughts out, like, I thought this was like a sneaky under the radar G1 card. Like, it's not going to be everyone's favorite. Like, for me, that first night in Osaka last weekend was probably a card of the tournament, unless one of these final three nights tops it. But this had some interesting stuff on the show, and it all kind of has stakes attached to it as we get towards the end here. But starting things off, it's Yoshihashi and David Finlay in the D block, and it's the battle of the busted up shoulders of these two. Whose arm was going to stay attached throughout this match? And Finlay goes after the weakened shoulder of Yoshihashi, repeated stomps in the corner, and Yoshihashi stops him with a blockbuster, and then Finlay with the Uranagi backbreakers. He's elbowing the shoulder. They trade lariats. Yoshihashi goes down, and then Finlay goes for the acid drop, and Yoshihashi just blocks it with this cradle, and boom, he just catches him out of nowhere in 11 minutes and 14 seconds. A jarring finish, and Jonah is just playing a dick during this match on commentary. He's insulting David Finlay. He's insulting his dad. And at the end, Kelly denies to David Finlay, "I wasn't trying to jinx you." So Jonah proudly says, "I jinxed you. I prayed for it in the back that you would lose this." And you really didn't get the vibe that this guy was trying to be a heel, but for David Finlay, he absolutely was. We got to see quite the range of Jonah on commentary.
I enjoyed it just because it's, you know, Jonah, he kind of played back and forth of like storylines that are actually have happened or are happening in New Japan Strong versus actually just caring about the wrestling. And I'll go more into how his appreciation for Kenta comes into play and his time in Noah comes into play much later.
Right.
But I really enjoyed this match. Because of the flash pin, it felt... I need more flash pins in this tournament.
To sprinkle in there because you bite on so much more when you see that a fall can end out of nowhere. It's the same reason I like when they do like Zach and Evil, like just 44 seconds. It tells people that.
Oh my gosh. I loved that one. I know a lot of people were mad about it, especially like the Evil and Zack Sabre fans that were at the venue were so upset about it. But I'm like, no.
I enjoyed that a lot.
I need more of this, especially because... You know, I liked that he actually got convinced one of the Young Lions to go in on it with him. So
if I'm somebody that's like looking at Zach's lineup in the block and all his singles matches, I don't know if I'm circling Evil. It's like, okay, there's the night I've got to be there.
I mean, we did have big match Huge versus Takagi last night. So
that's right. I'm sure that made everyone happier after losing out on the Zach Evil match. You got Yujiro in a classic. So I thought this was like a strong start to the night of tournament matches. I went large with a Milk and Sugar. I've been a broken record. I've been very impressed with David Finlay in this tournament overall. I think that he has just really advanced his standing significantly. Doesn't need to win this block. He has, to me, gotten plenty with the wins over Shingo and Will. There's like endless directions for him after this tournament. And I think just his overall presence, his confidence, it's been impossible not to detect that in this tournament. So just from watching him, like literally from his first match in New Japan to where he is now, like this to me was the biggest breakout over these last 5 weeks for him.
I think that's the one thing that has me very hesitant about how the blocks may play out in the next couple of days, because Yoshihashi and Finlay have had such a bizarrely strong G1 based, not necessarily every single match, but their matches have been consistently good.
Yeah.
But they've also been the ones in the block racking up wins against people that they're like, there's no way they're beating Shingo. There's no way they're beating Ospreay. But like each of them hold credible wins in this tournament. So it's one of those things where I'm just like, my pick is Shingo anyway, but now I'm just like, I really, really want Finlay to win. I really want Yoshihashi to win. So I gave them a large of some whipped cream, caramel, and sprinkles because they're the best boys. They're the best boys in the D block.
And we have more coffee to disperse with only four matches on this show. The B block match that followed was a Taichi at 2-3 against Great O'Khan, who is 1-4 with 2 points. So both guys are out of it. They're just fighting for points at this point. O'Khan is just going to his back and trying to invite Taichi into his guard. And Taichi is setting up with the sumo stance. Neither is engaging. And they get stood up by the referee. I thought we were going to get a yellow card issued and their pay would be affected. But the Yokozuna elbow is then met with a judo throw by O'Khan, who goes to the sheep killer. And Taichi stops the eliminator, but he has the grip applied as Taichi is trying for Black Mephisto and goes for a ghetto clutch for a two count. And then Taichi shoots in for a single leg and it's blocked, and Okan just hits a fisherman suplex again out of nowhere, catching Taichi in only 7 minutes and 8 seconds. So both are going to end with a 2-4 records. This was a really weird match. Yeah. It was also a very different match. And in the G1, when we're watching all of these, I love different. So yeah. This one was like, it was a weird, but I enjoyed it for the 7 minutes that it lasted. Not at the level of the match we just talked about, yeah. But this was more up my alley, that I liked that they had like these different styles, and it was kind of like it was each of their kind of foundations colliding.
I think it was just so refreshing that it wasn't the same old shtick from either of them.
Totally.
That they're both leaning into what they hold important to themselves as wrestlers. You know, Okan with more of the MMA and like heavy, like technical wrestling background, and Taichi, even though he jokes around about all the sumo stuff, he's a huge sumo fan. He's like incorporated that it's a sport. I don't want to say martial art, but that sport into his craft. But again, I know that this match wouldn't necessarily be one for everyone, but personally I enjoyed it. And yeah, it was short.
It was 7 minutes. I'm not like breaking the ranking system on this. I went like medium, milk, sugar, sleeve, just below like a large. But I enjoyed this. I liked the variation to it. And much like we just talked about with the last match, like a finish out of nowhere with the Fisherman Buster. And just it showed me like they just approached this with like a different kind of mindset to kind of separate themselves and not just be so many matches in this tournament just fade into the background and it's just a blur of matches. They tried to do something a little bit different here. And in between matches, they're talking about Jonah wrestling at Nippon Budokan this week for the first time ever, and he brought up that he was there ringside when he was doing Noah dates for Kenta Kobashi's retirement show in 2013. So he will get his first match in the arena this Tuesday against Bad Luck Fale. So it's not all great news, but nonetheless. Sorry, I was very kind to Yujiro. Fale, prove me wrong on Tuesday. I will be more than fair.
That's more for Jonah. Bless Jonah.
Yeah, that's going to be a rough match, but we will see what they have cooked up for Tuesday. But a cool story there, just with the backdrop there of his history being in that building. Jeff Cobb against Tom Lawler in the A block. So Jeff Cobb, as I mentioned, he's technically alive, but this is absolute must win for him. Tom Lawler is out after the Okada loss. So he is down at 2-3 in this block. So Kelly, at the beginning, he goes through this whole history lesson of Judo Jean LaBelle, and they talk. Jonah like links it up with like the LaBelle grip using like the three fingers, and Kelly explains how Carl Gotch learned under Jean LaBelle, and then when the New Japan Dojo launched, that's what Carl Gotch taught to all of the students there, the LaBelle grip. So it's kind of linking Jean LaBelle to kind of the lineage of New Japan homegrown performers. So we get into the match. It's a grappling sequence at the beginning, and Jonah's bringing up Cobb's previous win against Lawler back at Bloodsport, and says that Tom Lawler is the only human in the monster block, specifically noting Okada is superhuman. The rest are the monsters, and Lawler is the mere mortal. Cobb then leaps into the corner, right into a rear naked choke from Tom, who's on the back, and they tumble to the floor, and we get Inoki-style kicks from Lawler off the ground, and then an elevator sweep into an armbar setup. He rolls to the ankle lock, and Cobb breaks it with hammer fists, and then just deadlifts Lawler off the mat into this overhead belly-to-belly. This dude is so goddamn strong, Jeff Cobb. Yes. It's I think we take it for granted when we just see all of these guys doing these impressive feats of strength. Lawler hits a divorce court off the top and transitions to an omoplata, but then loses the ankle lock and then hits a big muso. Hammerlock, forearms by Lawler. He is super kicked by Lawler, and that staggers and drops Cobb with a forearm, and then Lawler is just exhausted, so he collapses as well. Cobb is able to hit these rolling Germans while Lawler is holding onto the arm the entire way, and then goes for a last-ditch Kimura. He gets free, drills him with kicks and the Kamigoye, only generating a two count, and it's Cobb who avoids the nasty knee on the brain, hits a version of a Regal Plex, and then Tom Lawler hits the NKOTB, and he wins in 14 minutes and 3 seconds. This match was awesome. I really, really love this match.
I loved this match. And I don't know if it's because of my affinity for both Tom Lawler and Jeff Cobb, but it was a match that I think a lot of people may not necessarily have thought that it would be one of the standout matches, but
I went to block. I screwed up and I gave him just a window. No, we're not going to make any mention of that for the audio people out there.
Okay. But I personally enjoyed it, but I think it was also because of how emotionally invested I have been through Tom Lawler's backstage promos. Like last time we talked, you asked me if I had watched his promos, and I'm like, I don't know if I was in the right headspace. I watched a couple right before we went on air, and okay, I was sobbing, and I'm just like, and that's why like I have this lovely like rosy glow. It's because I was like all patchy and gross and like ugly crying, because I want more than anything to give Tom Lawler the whole world at this point. And like between him and the way that Jeff had Jeff's tournament last year, it's like I want both of these guys to succeed so incredibly much that I was just like, could this be the only draw of the tournament, please? Because I don't want to see either of them lose. But if at this point it was just they're just fighting for points and trying to help thin out the herd at the top for Okada to advance eventually, I understand why Cobb had to lose.
Yeah, I thought like the grappling, the submission sequences, just the back and forth here. These were two opponents that, I mean, here you have like a legit Olympic level wrestler and Jeff Cobb with someone of Tom Lawler's background. It just seemed like they're great styles. They have worked together before in Bloodsport. So, I mean, this had all the makings for it. It exceeded it and then some. I just thought, like, the submission and grappling, this was, like, top level for me. I just thought this was a real standout match. Like, I thought Lawler's match with Okada was very good. I feel this was Lawler's best match of the tournament. It was definitely my favorite of the six matches that he had in the G1. So, ending it off really strong and getting finishing with 6 points. So, you know, he finishes at 500 and equals Jeff Cobb in both of their last matches. So, I went XL with a milk and sugar on this one.
I, too, went XL with some whipped cream and sprinkles.
And that takes us to the main event. It is the rematch from Wrestle Kingdom this past year where Kenta nearly killed himself, taking on Hiroshi Tanahashi. So Tanahashi is at 3-2, Kenta 2-3. And this is both of their final matches in the C block. So they did give an update here about Hirooki Goto, who last we saw in the main event with Tanahashi, his mouth was all bloody. And on the broadcast, they were worrying about it being a jaw issue. It turned out it was just his lip that generated all that blood and required stitches. So Goto, a lot better than a broken jaw if you just got stitches on the lip. So they're noting that TV Asahi recently listed its 15 most popular wrestlers, and the top three were Okada, Tanahashi, and Naito. So there, I guess he didn't read all top 15, so I don't know where Yujiro finished.
I believe he was not in the top 15, but yes, it was a fan vote across the country. So it had a whole, I think it went up to like 50 different people because they included lots of Stardom wrestlers and stuff like that. But of course, yeah, your top three were Okada, Tanahashi, Naito.
Yeah. And like very notable, like these have been the flag bearers of the company for the last 10 years. And to the public, clearly they see them as, you know, the pillars of this company. Jonah is sick of all the two sweets from the Bullet Club. He's going to ask his buddies Hunter and Sean to clamp down on that stuff of people using it outside. So Tanahashi kicks Kenta into the rail from the apron, and Kenta takes him ringside and DDTs him onto the padding on the floor. And big kicking attack here from Kenta finally gets stopped with a dragon screw. And then Kenta's delivering closed fists. And Kevin Kelly explains to Jonah, to get disqualified around here, you literally need to hit someone with a chair in the ring right in front of the ref. That's about it. And Jonah realizes, you know what? I'm going to start adding closed fists then with all this leeway. I don't have to be worrying about a disqualification. Smart man. You're a little late in the tournament to figure this out. Tanahashi then misses a slap and destroys Red Shoes, who takes the slap from hell. This was up there with this was definitely the best ref bump of the tournament. And there's probably about 250 candidates for ref bumps in this G1.
Yes, but I think in all fairness, when Tanahashi hit him, I was like, oh, like I felt that. I felt like he slapped someone's grandma, and then like Red Shoes just followed through and just like almost fell out of the ring with the momentum. It was probably, It was hands down the best ref bump of the entire month that we've been watching this.
This was one where this slap legitimately justified Red Shoes being down for as long as he was. Like, dude, Tanahashi
ice
didn't,
pack on his face.
Dude, they were icing the jaw. Yeah. And dude, Tanahashi did not take that. Dude, this was Stephanie McMahon times 10. It was he rocked him with this slap. So quite the visual. And Kenta then goes underneath the ring and pulls out the crutch. A metaphor, if there ever was one, for these Bullet Club matches, and sets up the dreaded Japanese table on the floor. And it was interesting because, dude, this crowd, you could have heard a pin drop. And the commentators are noting it, that they're just in awe here. They can't believe what they're seeing. But it was so quiet. It was, yes. There was no sound in any of this. It was like Silent Library or something. So Kenta teases the double foot stomp to the floor, but Tanahashi meets him on the turnbuckle. There's headbutts by Kenta. That leads to a green killer. This is where Red Shoes is icing his jaw as he's trying to recover. Man did finish the match. And Kenta hits the double stomp, only gets a two count. And then he takes the table from the floor, and he just uses the table as a weapon to throw at Tanahashi. And he then drapes him. He's hanging onto the middle rope when this table just blasts him in the head.
Yeah.
He tried for several attempts at the GTS, but Tanahashi stopped him, hit the sling blade, hit aces high, but then the high fly flow lands on Kenta's knees, Bosaiku knee, and then goes for the GTS. Tanahashi battles a counter here with an inside cradle, and then Kenta with the crazy slaps, a knee to the face, and he hits the GTS, pinning Tanahashi, gaining his revenge in 23 minutes and 47 seconds. Not only getting the win and moving up to 500, but Tanahashi is now mathematically eliminated from the C block as a result of this loss, as Kenta sits over top of him and the announcers tell us that it is not over between these two.
It was one of those things where when that table came out, I feel like the audience was like in awe, but they were also mortified because they remember one, because of course commentary talked about the scars that were on Kenta's back from the table from Wrestle yes. Kingdom. But also they all know that those tables, when I was in Japan, those were the bane of my existence. So I would clip my leg on them in the staff room all the time. So I know that those are like not, they're not very flexible. They don't have much give. But when they did that, when he threw it at Tanahashi and Tanahashi didn't even bother to cover his head.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I was like, no. You can do the chairs. So they all, you know, the cushions are kind of like they're rigged so that the cushion will pop out. But that table has zero give. Like the amount of F's it would give, zero. So I was like, oh no, we're not doing this again. We're not going here again, are we? No, please don't. Please don't.
The heads to the table, like the El Fantasmo juice match, that's the one where Fantasmo takes his head and he just bashes it over and over until there's a hole in the table. I was like, man, this head stuff is just not for me at all.
No.
But I thought this was like it was a compelling main event.
Yes.
I had Cobb and Lawler as my match of the show, but I thought this was like a strong main event. And it hit me when they did reference like the scar. It's like they have done such a great job of reminding everyone, like every Kenta match, they bring up that match with Tanahashi. So by the time this match took place tonight, like it felt like this has been built up for a long time since January. Granted, Kenta's been out most of that time, but they've constantly kept that in your memory that you know this is Kenta's big match of the whole G1 was getting into the ring with Tanahashi. So it meant a lot when he won the match, and I'm sure they're going to do this one again maybe in October or something.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is that even after that match when they had it in January and, you know, Tanahashi's backstage crying saying that this isn't the kind of wrestling I want. This isn't what I wanted to do. I didn't want to hurt him the way he got hurt. And then Kenta basically just tweeted at him being like, but we went out there and we did it. We did the best thing. So it's one of those things where it's like, even though when they're in the ring together and they're, you know, they're being, you know, the white hat, black hat, they are both of an age because they're both over 40 at this point. They're both doing the most they can and to give the audience a good story. And their story has started well before this Wrestle Kingdom with, you know, the briefcase when Kenta had the contract briefcase from New Japan Strong. So it's been like this like continuous story pretty much ever since he turned on Shibata to join Bullet Club. So it's one of the longer told stories that, you know, gets brought up every 6 months between them, but it's consistently a good story. Like it always doesn't necessarily feel like not fresh, but when it comes back, you're like, oh yeah, we're still doing this. This is still going on. And personally, as a fan of both Tanahashi and Kenta, I was like, ooh, this match is just for me. But
I thought like the storytelling in this match were really strong. Like I was pretty captivated by it. I went large milk sugar sleeve just below XL territory, but I thought they had a really strong match. This would be, I think with Kenta, this one and the Zach matches were the ones that really stood out for me. Tanahashi has had a low key, like, fantastic tournament. Like, yes. When you look at the six matches, it's kind of tough as we now go back and look, because you had these big gaps between matches that sometimes you forget to like string along some of the matches these guys have had. But this was a strong end to the tournament for both guys.
The only thing I'm hoping for is that we don't get that Nick New Japan notice like in the next day or so, saying that Red Shoes has been taken off the next couple of cards because his little jaw's been busted open. Because like as soon as he got hit, it made me think of what happened to Goto a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
So I'm just hoping everyone's okay. But I also rated this fairly high. I gave it an extra large just because I'm a big softy and I have gold stars for everyone today.
Well, there you have it, everybody. That was day number 17, and we'll go over the contest updates, and then we're going to dive into all of the scenarios going into the final round-robin matches. We'll get some predictions from Karen. But for our listener contest, Steve S. stands atop the mountain going into the final three nights. Well, really, this will wrap up on Tuesday. But Steve S. is on top with 53 points, but it is close, folks. Darren B. and Jordan Show with 52 points, and John Mack and Miss Ozzy with 51 points. So I would say those five, it's winnable for any of them. One day after 194 of you went 5 for 5, 13 people went 5 for 5 on Sunday.
Wow.
With Stephen Liu, Shruby, Party Marty, Mark B, Mark Butler, Louis from Montreal, John K, Jay from Colorado, James TD, James Wims, Doug Greenwood, Adam Joyce, and Brandon from New Jersey. 5 for 5.
I love how your voice just dropped. The very like, and Brandon from New Jersey.
I mean, yeah. Jesus, the only guy who would go out of his way to tweet his accomplishment ahead of time. But there you go. Congratulations, Brandon and company, for going 5 for 5. In the prestigious E block, Jordan Goodman, despite a very rough day, going 1 for 5. He's just about clinched it. He's got 50 points. He is in good standing. He will likely take this one. Eric Marcotte, a valiant effort, 46 points in second place. Randobot, also not doing great today, 1 for 5. He's in third with 45 points. Then we got Bruce Lord and Davey Portman tied with 44. Oh, John Cena is also tied with them with 44. Then Brad the Archivist, 42. Neil Flanagan, 41 points. WH has come out of the basement. He is now at 37 points. Myself and Wei are near the bottom, tied with 36, and there is Karen Peterson with 34 points. So you, me, and Wei, I think WH is slowly distancing himself out of the bottom pack, but he's still somewhat linked to us. So
I feel like somebody just like kicked Wei off of the top of the mountain.
Wei went 0 for 5.
For a while, wasn't he?
He had a bad day. He went 0 for 5 on Sunday, so that brought him down to our level. So welcome, Wei.
Welcome.
Let's see here. It was very close. 52% picked Kenta to beat Tanahashi, so that was a close one. 51% picked Great O'Khan to beat Taichi. 38% of you had Yoshihashi beating Dave Finley, and only 36% of you saw Tom Lawler beating Jeff Cobb. So that looked to be a much tougher prediction for folks out there. So on Tuesday, it will be the final round robin matches at Budokan Hall. So what we have point-wise, looking at the A block, it is the ones who are still alive are Kazuchika Okada, Lance Archer, and Jonah. So Okada has 8 points, Archer has 6, and Jonah has 6. So the match that's taking place is Okada versus Archer, and then Jonah is taking on Bad Luck Fale. So if Okada beats Archer or draws, he wins. If Archer beats Okada, then he wins the block, and he also has a tiebreaker against Jonah.
Okay.
In order for Jonah to win, both Archer and Jonah would have to win, because then Jonah has the tiebreaker against Archer. So those are our scenarios. So winnable for any of these three. I would be stunned if it is not Okada coming out of the block. Do you see any chance of an upset victory by Archer or Jonah?
If it were to be Archer or Jonah, that would I would be more likely to understand it if Jay advances out of B block, because they're not going to have Jay lose before going to the finals. but I still think it's going to be Okada.
Yeah, yeah. I feel Okada wins this one, and that will be, yeah, Archer's downfall at the end. B block is the simplest. It's Jay White against Tama Tonga, and the winner advances. You know, for like a week or so out, I assume that White would have a loss to give, but the way this ends up is he does not have a loss to give, and I feel he's just going to sweep the block here and finish 6-0 and advance.
It's difficult because I feel like they need to start setting up challengers for Jay leading towards Wrestle Kingdom. And usually the champion at this point has dropped at least a loss, unless it was, I think, Okada and Jeff were on the last night last year.
Yes.
But at that point, Tama had already beaten Okada.
Tama beat, it was Cobb that beat, where are we going here? So Tama got the win against Okada. And then Cobb had where was Cobb's win? Cobb lost to Okada last year.
That's right.
That's right. And
oh, but Okada wasn't champion last year. Sorry.
It's we can't do complicated G1 math outside of the own year. There's only
so much
capacity.
Shot. But I mean, I would like Tama to advance, if only to set up a match against Jay, so Jay has a challenger coming out of this tournament.
Well, that's what I thought was conventional thinking, was someone beats him to set up, King of Pro Wrestling or Power Struggle. That's kind of my thinking now, is that Okada beats Jay, although that feels like way too big of a match to go to in October or November.
Yeah,
but
we had it earlier this year too, so it's like Jay and Okada is another one I don't want to see too much of too close.
Yeah. I'd be surprised though if it's not Okada and Jay White, but I don't know. We'll see if Tama Tonga maybe has the big upset here, or if someone else squeezes out of the A block. But I'm still leaning towards Okada and Jay White.
Yeah.
Now the C block, it is down to Zach, Naito, and Goto. So Zach has 8, Goto and Naito have 6 points, and they are all technically still alive. So Zach is taking on Naito. Huge match in the tournament. That was the one and only match for Naito last year when he got hurt and was removed. So if Zach wins or draws, he wins. If Naito beats Zach, then Goto also has to lose, because Goto has the tiebreaker by beating Naito earlier. If Naito and Goto both win, it would be a three-way tie. Zach has the tiebreaker over Goto, and Goto, as I said, has the tiebreaker over Naito. I do feel one of the blocks, it's just they've played up the playoff match so much that this is the block I could see it happening, because that second night at Budokan, I think you want to fill it out a bit more beyond the two semifinal matches, that this is the one I could see of Naito having to win earlier in the night and then face your D block winner that same night. And you're telling the story of Naito having to wrestle two matches on Wednesday and come back for the finals potentially on Thursday. So that's kind of my pick of the three blocks, which one has the playoff round. I guess there's an outside chance you could do that with the A block, but the C, it does seem possible they could do that playoff round.
My thing is that commentary has been talking more about the multi-person runoff for D block.
Yeah, which just sounds like a nightmare to try and figure out if
everyone tied. Part of me still wants Naito to be the one to advance out of C, just because I'm hoping we get Naito Shingo finally.
I feel that is the match we're going to get at the end of all this. How they get there will be interesting. But yeah, so if Naito and Goto win, that would create our three-way tie. Goto is taking on Evil on Tuesday as well. So Evil could also pick up 2 points and just eliminate Goto's hopes there. And then it would be Zach and Naito to determine the block. D block. So there is a chance where everyone could finish with the same amount of points. But it's two matches. It's Takagi against Phantasmo and Ospreay against Juice Robinson. So if both win, Takagi is advancing because he has the tiebreaker over Ospreay. If both of them win, Takagi wins. If both lose, everyone in the block is tied. And I don't know what you do with 7 people to figure that out. They've played it up a lot, so I can't say there's no chance of that happening. It just seems so complicated, but you also have a whole Budokan show to book the next day, so you can't dismiss it outright. If Ospreay wins or draws and Takagi loses, then Ospreay advances. So those are I feel ultimately this comes down to Takagi and Ospreay, and it's whoever you think is going ahead. At the beginning of the tournament, I picked Takagi to win the block. I think you did the same because of the Naito factor the C block. So I'm sticking to that prediction that however this ends, Takagi wins the block.
And also, Ospreay has the whole situation with Finlay and Juice over the U.S. Championship. So I feel like Ospreay already has, plus he has the AEW thing next week, but I feel like he already has something teed up for the finals day where he could theoretically have a title defense on that last day.
Yeah, I feel Naito and Ospreay is a match that I just wouldn't want to do on a day's notice. I think that could be a really big match next year.
They need time to heal up. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Like, I think this is your one chance to do Naito Takagi with a reason for the LIJ members to face one another. That, you know, we know it was going to happen last year in the round robin, and it was
just
taken
more
away.
Organic this way, so.
Yeah, so that's where I kind of see things going. I'll put you on the hot seat. Who is going to be our G1 winner? Is it Naito? Is it Tama Tonga? Is it is it El Fantasmo who's going to surprise everyone after the 7-way tie?
I mean, Yujiro's not going to come in and win the whole thing now.
No, he's gone.
I am firmly in the Naito camp.
All right. Well, there you go. Naito to win, according to one Karen Peterson. So
he's dead last, by the way.
Hey,
don't take anything I say with
your word
a
is
giant
gospel,
rock
Karen.
Assault.
So just looking once again for Tuesday's show, it's 8 round robin matches, and Mike Murray will be with me on Tuesday to go through that card. Okada against Lance Archer, Jonah against Bad Luck Fale, Ishii against Sonata, Tama Tonga against Jay White, Goto against Evil, Naito versus Zach, Shingo against Phantasmo, and Ospreay against Juice Robinson. This looks like an awesome card on Tuesday, as much as we look at all the different, like, there's a ton of stakes involved, which are only going to enhance the matches, but this is a pretty solid 8-match card that they have set up for Tuesday.
I feel like the weekends they were a little stingy this G1 on the great matches on the weekends, because I keep seeing all these cards for the weekdays that everyone else gets to review, and I'm like, wait, that card's so much better than what I get. So I know it's that last stretch, and they're going to try to sell out the Budokan 3 days in a row, which is why they stack it that hard. But man, it's one of those things where just like some of those matches, I understand why they're placed there, because those are this could be the ones that make or break the tournament for people. But I just feel bad for everyone else who's already out at this point that are just like showing up to play spoiler.
Yeah, and there'll probably be a lot of that on Tuesday's card as well, as hopes are dashed. So there you go. That is, you're all up to date now on the latest on the G1. So again, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we will have shows for Post Wrestling Cafe members. Mike Murray with me Tuesday, and then Bruce Lord on Wednesday and Thursday. Bruce and Mark Buckledy have been doing a fantastic job with written reports on all of the shows. And catch this weekend's Dream Slam Weekly from Karen Peterson. She has you all covered of all things Joshi in Japan and going through the 5-star Grand Prix and every other promotion under the sun. She's got you covered. Anything else you want to throw out there that you're working on?
Right now? Nope. All is good.
Simple. Doesn't have to promote. We are back on Monday night, folks. So we got the Brian Gewirtz interview dropping at 11 a.m. And cafe members might get that a few hours early when you wake up. And then Monday night, Nate Milton is with me on Rewind to Raw. So Karen, thank you as always for joining me. Thanks to everyone for joining us live, except for the bots that I tried my best. I had one public fail in there as I tried my best. Trying my best, folks. I'm holding many tasks here all at once. Thank you, Brian, for the kind words. Eric, Paul, all of you in the
thanks,
chat room.
Guys.
MJ, we will be chatting with you many times this week. And this is the last G1 show with Karen. So, Karen, I just wanted to thank you for hopping on with me. It's always great to chat with you. And, you know, I was really happy with all of our G1 coverage this year, and you were a big part of it.
Thank you so much. I had a great time participating. And again, if you need me next year, you know where to find me.
Already recruited, okay? Unlike Hanare having to wonder if he gets the invite back or not, the letter is in the mail. You are
even
officially
if I'm
hired.
Dead last in the E block, I'm like, oh, pick me.
No, it's the long-term build. You just watch. Next next year, Karen's coming back with a vengeance. She's going to Jay White this thing. She's going undefeated.
I'm perfect just happy to be here, Karen.
All right, everybody. That is going to wrap it up. Thanks for joining us, and we will speak with you on Monday.